This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
Imagine you were tasked with building a state-of-the-art 100-story skyscraper.
Okay.
But right as you break ground, you find out you're legally banned from buying standard steel girders.
Oh, wow.
Right. So what do? I mean, you don't just stop building. You invent a totally new type of high tensile concrete. You completely redesign the architectural support structure.
Yeah, you find a workaround.
Exactly. And eventually, you build an entire domestic supply chain so you never have to buy those foreign materials again. You don't just build a building. You know, you build an entirely new way of constructing skyscrapers.
And that is exactly what is happening in the global technology race right now.
Yes, it is. Welcome to today's deep dive. We are exploring a massive systemic shift in how China is developing, scaling, and, well, exporting its technology.
Right.
It is no longer about just building a single fast computer chip or, you know, coding a clever mobile app. It's this relentless push toward an all-in-one closed-loop ecosystem. We're talking artificial intelligence, robotics, semiconductors, and telecommunications, all connected.
It really is a completely different paradigm. And to help us navigate this, we're looking at a deeply detailed briefing report and some really insightful commentary provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim, a former lawmaker.
Yeah, the data in this report is incredible.
It is. It's incredibly fresh, too. Specifically, we're looking at data from July 2026. This includes recent reports from China's Ministry of Industry and Information Technology, product reveals from the recent World Artificial Intelligence Conference, and some shifting global policy reports.
Okay, let's unpack this. Because if you are listening to this right now, whether you work in tech procurement, maybe you run a business, or, you know, you just want to understand why the gadgets you buy are changing. The global supply chain is literally shifting beneath your feet.
It absolutely is.
We are moving away from a world that asks, you know, who has the best individual component, to a world that dictates, well, who controls the entire package?
Right. And to really understand that package, we need to start at the top of the technology stack, the software, specifically the AI models. Because the developments from just the middle of July 2026, they reveal a very specific, a highly pragmatic strategy.
Yeah, I was reading through the briefing from lawyer Kyungjin Kim, and there was this note about a company literally running out of computer power because user demand was just so overwhelming.
Yeah.
What exactly happened there?
Right. So that was Moonshot AI. On July 16th, they launched their Kimi K3 model. And the influx of users was so massive and instantaneous that they actually had to temporarily halt new signups.
Wait, really? Just shut it down?
Yeah. And it wasn't a software bug or like a glitch in their code. It was a raw physical limitation. The compute resources, I mean, the actual physical servers required to process all those user requests, they were exhausted instantly.
Wow.
They simply ran out of processing juice. But the full weights of that model, the underlying architecture, they're actually scheduled for release today, July 27th.
That's wild. So it's moving fast.
Oh, incredibly fast. And they aren't the only ones moving at this speed. Tencent Cloud, they had users testing the preview version of their iShui 3 model. And then on July 24th, they just automatically pushed all those users directly to the official enterprise version.
So no more beta testing, just boom, you're live.
Exactly. They are taking these models out of experimental labs and just forcing them into live corporate environments immediately.
But wait, if physical compute power is the bottleneck, like we just saw with Moonshot AI,
yeah.
How do they solve that? I mean, you can't just magically spawn new servers out of thin air.
Right. And that brings us to a fascinating software development from a company called Xiaohongshu. On July 25th, they revealed this multimodal training system called Big Mac.
Big Mac. I like the name.
Yeah. And this system is designed to address a very specific and honestly very frustrating bottleneck in AI training. It addresses the fundamental tug of war between processing speed and memory capacity.
Okay, walk me through that tug of war. Like, why is it an either or situation?
Well, when you train a large AI model, you are feeding it massive amounts of data.
Right.
If you want to speed up that learning process, the system naturally needs to hold more of that data in its short-term memory simultaneously so the processors can actually access it.
Okay, makes sense.
But eventually, that memory capacity maxes out and the whole system crashes. On the flip side, if you restrict the flow of data to save your memory from crashing,
then your processors slow down.
Exactly. Your extremely expensive GPUs, the processors doing the actual thinking, they end up just sitting idle. They finish a calculation and then just, you know, wait around for the next batch of data to arrive.
Oh, I see.
So Big Mac is a training system designed to optimize this flow dynamically. And they claim it speeds up tasks by up to 1.9 times without crashing the memory.
Okay, so it's like hiring a world-class chef.
Okay.
The chef is your GPU.
Right.
Incredibly fast, highly skilled, capable of chopping vegetables at lightning speed.
Sure.
But if you put that chef in a kitchen with absolutely zero counter space, which is your memory, the chef just stands there holding a knife, waiting for a place to put the cutting board.
Yes, exactly.
So ShaHamChu essentially redesigned the layout of the kitchen so the chef never has to stop moving.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. What's fascinating here is that, according to the briefing, Chinese tech companies are increasingly ignoring vanity benchmark scores.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, they aren't trying to build AI models just to pass theoretical tests or, you know, prove how smart they are in a vacuum. They are laser-focused on overcoming the actual bottlenecks of physical hardware in daily operations.
That's very practical.
Highly practical. Companies like Tencent are focusing on coding agents, processing long enterprise documents, business automation. They are building tools that make money immediately.
It is a totally pragmatic pivot. Just build what works, build what sells, and, you know, figure out the hardware limitations through clever software engineering, like that Big Mac system.
And we have to remember, this pragmatic push is happening under an intense geopolitical spotlight. The U.S. White House and Treasury Department have actively raised concerns about Moonshot AI's Kimi, specifically questioning its access to restricted chips and distillation processes.
Right.
Remaining entirely neutral on international trade policy here, our source material just points out the reality on the ground. This software race has undeniably become a geopolitical tug of war. Technical performance competition is, well, it's immediately translating into sanctions debates.
Wait, hold on. This leads me to a massive question. You just mentioned restricted chips, and we all know there are intense restrictions on acquiring top-tier U.S. hardware.
Yes, there are.
So how are they keeping the lights on? I mean, you can't just duct tape 1,000 mediocre chips together and expect them to beat one cutting-edge superchip. The latency alone, right? The delay in communication between all those separate chips trying to talk to each other. That would completely bottleneck the system. So how is a massive surge in AI capability even viable under these hardware bans?
That is the defining engineering hurdle they had to overcome. Since they are largely blocked from acquiring the single most powerful peak performance Western chips, they had to rethink the architecture entirely.
Okay.
The answer lies in something called a supernode.
A supernode? Yeah, Huawei showcased this at the World Artificial Intelligence Conference on July 17th with their Ascend 950 Supernode. We are no longer talking about the power of a single chip. This is a massive, highly integrated cluster of 1,024 chips acting as a single unit.
Okay, but how do they solve the latency issue you'd get from linking over 1,000 chips? I mean, getting them to talk fast enough?
Through brilliant interconnectivity, they've designed incredibly fast internal communication pathways so these 1,024 chips can share data almost instantaneously. It delivers one EFLOPS of computing power at FP8 precision, backed by a staggering 256 terabytes of unified memory space.
Whoa, okay, let's break those terms down for a second because they sound massive.
Yeah.
What is one EFLOPS, and what does FP8 precision actually mean in this context?
Good question. So one EFLOPS means the system is capable of performing 1 billion mathematical operations per
A
second.
billion.
Yeah. It is an incomprehensible scale of raw computing muscle. But the FP8 part, that is the real secret sauce here. FP8 stands for 8-bit floating point. In computing, precision refers to how detailed your numbers are. Imagine calculating the value of pi out to 100 decimal places versus just rounding it to 3.14.
Right.
If you are doing complex scientific simulations, you need hyper-accurate, high-precision math. But for AI training, you actually don't need absolute mathematical perfection for every single calculation. You need massive volume and velocity.
Oh, I get it.
So FP8 is a lower precision format that trades that hyper-accuracy for sheer blinding speed. By optimizing for FP8, they are squeezing maximum AI training efficiency out of these clustered chips.
So the competitive edge has shifted entirely. It is no longer about who has the single best piece of hardware silicon. It is about who has the best cluster design and the software adaptation to make 1,024 slightly less powerful chips behave like one giant unified brain.
Precisely. And they are scaling the strategy at a national level. By the end of June 2026, China's total intelligent computing power reached 2,185 EFLOPS. That is a 177% increase year over year.
Wow. But a brain that massive needs an equally massive amount of short-term memory to function, right? We talked about the kitchen counter space earlier.
Yeah.
If they're building these huge supernodes, where are they getting the memory to feed them?
They are heavily funding their own domestic production. And actually today, July 27th, provides a perfect example of this. Changxin Memory, or CXMT, they're China's leading DRM maker. They are debuting on the Shanghai Star Market today with a massive 57.9 billion RMB public offering.
That's huge.
Yeah, it puts their valuation around 580 billion RMB.
Okay, and just to clarify for the listener, DRE is dynamic random access memory. It's the standard workhorse memory used in almost all computing, correct?
Correct. Now, there is a higher tier called HBM, or high bandwidth memory, which involves stacking memory chips vertically for insane speeds. Western companies and their allies currently dominate HBM.
Right.
But by throwing massive capital market funding behind CXMT, China is securing the foundational mid-tier DRAM layer. They aren't trying to be a cheap alternative or just a backup supplier.
What's the goal then?
Well, when you combine this IPO with industry chatter about global companies testing Chinese memory for regional products, the goal becomes very clear. They are positioning themselves to be a complete, self-sufficient domestic substitute for server memory.
Right, so let's connect the dots here. They have the pragmatic AI models generating revenue. They have the massive supernode clusters doing the heavy processing workarounds. And they have the domestic DRAM feeding those clusters.
Yep.
But an AI sitting in a server farm doesn't actually impact the physical world. How is this intelligence getting out to the end user?
It gets distributed through the telecommunications networks, and ultimately it takes physical form through robotics. This is where the strategy expands from just building computing components to controlling the actual pipes of the internet.
Here's where it gets really interesting. Think about a telecommunications company historically. Telcos used to just pave the roads and let data drive on them. They were just the highway.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't care what kind of car you were driving. They just provided the asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
But now with AI, they're building smart highways. They're actively processing the data of the cars while they are driving.
Right. They're moving the thinking out of the central data center and pushing it to the very edge of the road.
Right.
And we are seeing this explicitly with China Telecom. At a forum on July 19th, they announced that their Zhurang platform has crossed 100 EFLOP ES of management compute.
Wow.
That means a single telecom provider is actively managing a massive slice of the nation's total computing power. They aren't just leasing out server space anymore, you know. They are highlighting their ability to master the core technologies of large model training entirely within a domestic chip environment.
And they are building the next generation of smart highways to carry all this.
Mm-hmm.
The Ministry of Industry and Information Technology reported that their 5GA network already covered 330 cities by the end of March.
And 5GA is a crucial stepping stone. It's the advanced step between 5G and 6G. 5GA is essentially the testing ground for edge AI, which is exactly what you describe, bringing the computing power closer to the user rather than sending all data back to a central hub. Furthermore, phase two testing for 6G has already begun.
Already?
Yeah, China is bundling AI radio access networks, satellite communications, and the industrial internet into one cohesive telecom package. Because if you write the 6G standards, every device globally has to conform to your protocols to connect.
And what sits at the very edge of that network? Robots. The World Artificial Intelligence Conference this year showed a massive shift in robotics. We're past the era of robots doing backflips or dancing for a crowd just to show off.
Oh, absolutely.
4A showcased their GR3 humanoid robot, and it was doing household chores. It was transferring objects. The primary metric for success has shifted from mimicking humans perfectly to safety and actual physical task completion.
And look at the supply chain inside those robots. On July 22nd, a startup called Agibot confirmed that they are already using Chinese-made chips for their robot's cerebellum.
The cerebellum, meaning the part of the brain responsible for motor control and balance.
Exactly. The cerebellum chips handle the physical movement, the balance, the basic communication. Now, they might not be using domestic chips for the absolute highest level cognitive brain functions yet, you know, the parts formulating complex thoughts, but the trajectory is locked in.
And this creates a massive lock-in effect.
Mm-hmm.
As mass production of these robots scales up, the ecosystem naturally fuses together. Chinese robotics companies will grow alongside Chinese chip companies and Chinese telecom networks.
Right.
If you're a foreign competitor trying to sell robot joints or sensors or, you know, manufacturing services, you are going to get squeezed out of the loop because the internal components are being designed to talk specifically and exclusively to each other.
Which brings us to the most critical part of this entire deep dive.
Yeah.
If you are building this entirely self-contained, closed-loop ecosystem, how do you get the rest of the world to accept it?
Right.
You do it by writing the rules.
So for you, the listener, who is trying to figure out what this means for your industry, if you track semiconductors or you follow telecom trends or you are interested in AI software and you are looking at them as separate, distinct silos, you have completely missed the bigger picture.
This is where lawyer Kyungjin Kim's commentary in our briefing is absolutely crucial. He points out that the core competitive challenge isn't just the speed at which China is developing these technologies. The true challenge is the bundle.
The bundle. Let's unpack that.
China is packaging the AI model, the domestic memory, the telecom network, the technical standards, and the diplomatic treaties into one inseparable body. You cannot buy one without adopting the others.
Wow. Let's look at the diplomatic side of that bundle.
Yeah.
On July 23rd, the APEC Digital and AI Ministerial Meeting adopted the Chengdu Declaration. So China is actively using these international forums as an extension of its AI diplomacy.
Yes.
And then on the technical side, on June 26th, China rolled out 7 national standards for smart agent interconnection, alongside proposals for global cooperation.
They are writing the technical engineering specifications and the diplomatic phrasing at the exact same time. And it is working incredibly well domestically.
How so?
Well, the ministry reported that AI application in the manufacturing sector has exceeded 30%. And their open source models have hit 10 billion cumulative downloads globally.
10 billion?
Yeah, 10 billion downloads means developers all over the world are building applications on top of Chinese foundational architectures. They aren't just building models in a lab, they are plugging them directly into the global industrial base.
But as they build this massive ecosystem, they're also throwing up walls.
Right.
According to reports from Reuters, China is actively considering limiting overseas access to its top AI models, its learning data, and its chip designs.
Remaining entirely neutral on the politics here, our sources note this is just a direct mirror of U.S. actions. As the U.S. targets Chinese AI development with sanctions, China is naturally moving to treat its own open-weight models and chip designs as restricted national security assets.
That makes sense.
What looked like a collaborative open source community just a year ago is rapidly becoming a highly protected, walled garden of strategic assets.
So let's translate this into business reality. If you are a company operating globally, what is the practical fallout of this bundle? Our briefing highlights the impact on neighboring tech hubs like South Korea, but I imagine this applies to anyone in the global supply chain.
It does. The fallout is that corporate procurement and security practices have to change immediately. Lawyer Kyungjin Kim notes that while high-end technologies like HBM and advanced chip packaging still offer a competitive edge for companies outside China, the middle of the market is about to face massive, unprecedented pressure.
Middle of the market.
Right. As China bundles its domestic DRAM memory with its own server clusters and robotics, the market for selling mid-range servers or standard industrial robot parts is going to shrink drastically.
Because you won't be able to just sell them a mid-range memory chip or a basic sensor if they're only buying complete bundled supernodes and fully integrated robots from their own domestic suppliers. It is an all-or-nothing package.
Exactly. From a legal and policy perspective, companies urgently need to rewrite their procurement contracts and their cybersecurity checklists.
Right. It's not just checking a box anymore.
No, you can no longer just ask your IT department, you know, are we using a Chinese AI model? You have to track exactly what training data, what specific cluster chips, and what telecom cloud infrastructure are bundled inside the technology you are purchasing.
That sounds incredibly complex.
It is. If you buy a warehouse robot, you are buying the data standards and the cloud protocols that come with it. If you miss that, you open your company up to a nightmare of data privacy disputes, procurement violations, and technology leaks all at once.
It is not a component anymore. It's a closed loop. We have covered an incredible amount of ground today.
They really have.
We started by looking at the raw compute bottlenecks of the Kimi K3 AI model, which forced a highly pragmatic software pivot to things like Xiaohong Shu's Big Neck memory solution. We explored how hardware bans didn't stop development, but instead birthed Huawei's massive 1,024-chip supernodes, utilizing that lower FP8 precision to prioritize sheer speed.
Exactly.
We watched the telecom companies turn their networks into smart highways, powering edge AI and household robots. And finally, we saw how lawyer Kyungjin Kim's analysis reveals this entire operation as a single, massive diplomatic and technical bundle codified by international agreements like the APEC Chengdu Declaration.
This raises an important question, and it is something I want you, the listener, to really mull over as we wrap up.
Okay.
If an entire ecosystem from the AI model formulating a digital thought to the telecom network transmitting that thought to the humanoid robot physically executing it in a factory is built on a closed, tightly bundled architecture,
Ooh.
How will the rest of the world audit these systems for safety, privacy, or bias when they inevitably cross international borders?
That is a chilling thought.
When the digital brain, the telecom nerves, and the robotic muscles operate as a single, inseparable black box, who is truly in control of the machine?
It is like buying that custom-built skyscraper we talked about. But when you try to look at the blueprints to see how the foundation works, you realize the doors are locked and the windows are blacked out. Thank you so much for joining us on this deep dive. Keep questioning the systems you interact with. Always look closer at the components hidden inside the package, and we will catch you next time.
This program is provided by lawyer Kyungjin Kim.
For more from the same network, follow Daily AI News from Seoul on Apple Podcasts.